Hi, this is Tony Robbins. Welcome to another edition of Power Talk. Today's edition is on references, the fabric of our lives. And I don't know if I've ever said this explicitly, but really what determines the quality of our life is the way we evaluate things. You see, we all are going to experience different events in our lives, and some of them are universal. Things like birth, death, illness, losses, career obstacles, economic shifts, wars. See, the events of our lives are there, but see, our lives are determined by what we do with those events, how we interpret them, what we decide these things mean to us, and what we decide to do about them. See, it's easy to get seduced in life and say, well, the reason I'm not achieving what I want is because XYZ happened when I was a child, or someone didn't give me the resources I really wanted, or because the weather's this way, or because the economy's this way. But the reality is, it's never the events, it's always us. We're ultimately in control of our destiny by the decisions we make about what things mean and what we're going to do. So what controls that? Well, you and I have a system, an unconscious system for evaluating what things mean and what we should do. It's determining our actions every single day and therefore our destiny. And it has five parts to it. Number one, the state that you're in. The state you're in mentally and emotionally at any moment in time is going to radically shift the way you interpret what things mean and what you're going to do. Secondly, the questions you ask yourself constantly affect what you're evaluating, what you focus on, and the meaning that you take from it. Whether you ask yourself disempowering questions like, how come I always screw things up, and having your brain respond by saying, because you're an idiot, or whether you ask questions like, how can I turn this around? How can I utilize this experience to make my life greater? That changes completely what you focus on, what things mean, and what you're going to do with your life. It changes the event immediately and gives you control. The third element is values. See, the values that you hold constantly determine what you pay attention to most, what you try to move towards in your life. Is your life focused on contribution? Is your life focused on love or security or adventure or passion or success? Whatever it is, it's pulling you in a direction and shaping your destiny. You also have certain things you value because you want to avoid them. Certain emotional states like avoiding frustration or anger or humiliation or feeling like you're bored. All of these emotions also shape what we want to move away from in our lives, and therefore they affect the direction of our lives and our destiny. The fourth element in our system of evaluating what things mean to us and what we're going to do in our life is our belief systems. We have a whole variety of beliefs about ourselves, about other people, about possibility, about capability. We also have specific rule beliefs, beliefs that say, if you do this, then it means that. If you don't do this, then it means something else. All of these preconceived notions that we've developed within ourselves are filtering our experience of life on a daily basis, and different beliefs create a different destiny. If you hold the belief that people are rotten, no good, and they'll take advantage of you if you give them half a chance, obviously you're going to make different decisions as to what to focus on, what things mean when people do things, and what you're going to do about it. Then if you had a belief that said something like, people are basically good, they really do care, if you give them half a chance, they'll go for it. So we've talked about these issues in the past. But the one we've not talked about is the fifth element, references. You see, what do you think your beliefs have come from? Where do you think your values came from? You came from references. Well, what is this big word, references? References are nothing but the experiences of your life. But your experiences can be broken down into many different ways. There are the experiences that you've had consciously and the experiences you picked up unconsciously. Those little things that you never noticed that have filtered inside your brain. Your references aren't just limited to the story of your life, but quite literally, your references might be considered metaphorically as like a giant file box in your brain where everything you've ever seen, heard, tasted, touched, or smelled is all stored. Now, some of those references are organized. You've put them together to come up with a specific meaning to help you make decisions in the future. And those organized references we call beliefs. You say, wait a second, now I'm really confused. Well, think about it. What is a belief? A belief is nothing but a feeling of certainty about what something means. If you say, I believe I'm really intelligent, you're saying, I feel certain I'm intelligent. What makes you certain? You have references. Yeah, you've had experiences in your life where you learned something, or you took on a challenging environment and you were able to master it, or maybe somebody told you that you were intelligent, or you passed some tests. All of those experiences take the idea, the simple idea that maybe you don't believe to start with that you're intelligent, and make them solid by putting these legs underneath it. Think of references like the legs of belief. They make a belief solid, they make it real, they make you believe it, they make you feel certain about what something means. To give you a clearer picture, think of an idea as being like a tabletop that has no legs. It's not very solid, pretty wobbly. But the way we take that idea, whatever it is, let's say the idea is that you're sexy. The only way you're going to believe you're sexy is if you feel certain you're sexy. Now, I know you already believe this, so this is probably a moot point. But let's take it as an example. You just say, I'm sexy. You can say that and not believe it, not feel certain that it's true. But if you do say, I'm sexy and believe it, that is, you feel that certainty inside, why do you? Because underneath that tabletop, you got some references. Now, I'm not going to call on these people, but I'm sure you have some, right? You have some people you've had some experiences with who told you what a great, sexy person you were. Maybe, you know, you looked in the mirror one day and you compared it with some other picture of somebody else and said, I'm so much sexier than him or her. I don't know what you've done, but I'm sure you got plenty of those things. Or maybe somebody looked across at you while you were in bumper-to-bumper traffic and kind of got your attention and smiled at you and pointed at you. And you said, see, that means I'm sexy. The truth is, they were telling you to move, but you interpreted it as a reference that you were sexy. The point is really simple. We can take references for virtually anything and make them back up any idea we want. Hey, I got a question for you. Do you have references to back up the idea that people are rotten and they'll take advantage of you if you give them half a chance? Now, I know maybe you don't have personal references, but have you read about people who have done this? Have you heard about people who have done this? Have you ever had any experiences in your life? I know you don't believe it, but do you have references to back it up? Yes or no? You and I both know the answer is yes. Don't you also, though, have references to back up the idea that people really do care, and if you give them half a chance, they'll want to help you? If you don't have them personally, you certainly have read about them. The other day I heard about a man on television again, found $35,000 and returned it and refused to even be on camera. He just said it was the right thing to do and had to give it back, and it turned out it was the life savings of a 68-year-old woman. But he didn't want anybody to know he'd done it. Why? Because he has some references in his background as to what that would mean. If he were to take credit, and maybe it's different than you, you might say, well, why would he do that? I mean, you know, he doesn't have to boast about it, but why wouldn't he at least, you know, come on camera and say, I just thought it was the right thing to do. Why wouldn't he do that? See, if you've ever wondered why people do what they do, why they do something different than you, I have the answer. References. They have different references than you do. They've organized those references based on their life experiences to develop some beliefs. They believe if they were to do certain things in a certain way, it would mean something good or it would mean something bad. And all of our beliefs, based on the references of our life, are shaping our life moment to moment. It's literally directing our destiny. So maybe we should take control of this process. Think of it metaphorically. All the different reference experiences of your life, both the good and bad, the challenging and the exciting, all of these have been woven together to create the fabric of your life. And from that fabric, you've made decisions about beliefs and values that you were going to cut from that fabric. In other words, there's plenty of fabric there. You can shape it any way you want. You can create whatever beliefs or values you decide to in the moment. But the decisions you've made out of those references as to what shapes to pull out are going to determine what you sew together to shape the quality of life you have today and ultimately your destiny. Probably one of the most valuable things that references do for us is they help us to have a feeling of certainty when we go about doing something. Otherwise, we live our whole life afraid or in doubt. What would allow you right now to get up and step down on the floor and not be worried about whether the floor would support you or not? References. You got plenty of them. What would disturb you if suddenly the book in front of you began to float across the room? Another thing that would disturb you is it doesn't match your references. Why will a baby reach into a dirty ashtray, pull out a cigarette butt, and chew on it? Why? Because they don't have references to know it's not good for them. Of course, some adults still haven't figured that one out. Just a little comment on the side here. Back to our story. The bottom line is our references are shaping our life. And the problem is most of us are not paying attention to how we're interpreting our references, much less focusing on how do we get the references we need in order to succeed and achieve our goals. Hey, don't certain goals require certain references? Don't you have to have certain experiences, certain understandings, certain strategies in order to succeed? Have you sat down to figure out what those references really are? Or have you even sat down to figure out what you really want from your life? It's a whole other question. Better not get into that one or we'll be doing another tape. But let's come back here. As far as references are concerned then, if you want to know why people do what they do, the first place to look at is their references. If you don't understand what they're doing, just realize they probably just have different references than you do. There's a guy named Saddam Hussein, and he made a decision to go into Kuwait. Now, he did that based on a series of evaluations. One of them was after he met with one of our ambassadors, and his interpretation of that conversation was if he went there, it wouldn't equal too much pain. But let's look deeper than that. Years ago, President Bush shared with a reporter one of his first experiences on an aircraft carrier, where he observed a man cut in half right in front of him. And the only thing that caused him to be able to survive the moment and the terror and the horror was the booming voice of the commanding officer who said, "Sweep those guts off the deck immediately. Another plane is coming in or someone else will be hurt." And instantly, he and others had to sweep this person's body parts, what was left of them, off the deck. See, that kind of carnage, that kind of intensity, one has to learn how to deal with. And he had to deal with it in an instant because he had no choice. Certainly not something someone really wants to remember, but something I would imagine someone could never forget. What it taught George Bush as a young officer is you've got to be able to handle things no matter how intense they may be in the moment. I'll tell you an even more powerful example, maybe one that shaped his presidency. George was sent on many bombing missions, but probably the most vivid in his memory is when he was sent out to a small island in the South Pacific to bomb a radio tower on a prisoner of war facility. In fact, the Japanese officer who was running the camp was committing brutal war crimes against the prisoners. Unbelievable atrocities, not just physical abuse and psychological abuse, but he was literally cannibalizing some of these men and then taking their bodies and putting them in the soup as the meat and feeding it back to the other prisoners. And George knew he was coming to fly in and drop bombs on this facility. Well, just as he approached his bombing run, he was hit by enemy attack. Smoke filled the cabin. Everyone around him talked about ejecting, but George committed and said he was going to hit that antenna no matter what. And he managed in the final seconds to release his bombs and successfully destroyed the radio antenna. He then instantly turned to his crew and announced to eject. Then in the final seconds, he too ejected. But the catapulting process didn't work effectively. His body was slammed against the tail of the aircraft, puncturing a hole in his parachute and smacking his head, where he began to bleed profusely. As a result of the punctured parachute, he fell from the sky much more rapidly than he should, and in final seconds before hitting the water, to save himself, he cut himself loose of his parachute and fell deeply into the water, struggling back to the surface, bleeding all over the place, trying to figure out how he was going to survive. He looked around for the raft that would save his life, that would be filled with water and food. He found the raft, but the water and food canisters were destroyed by the impact with the tail. He had no way he was going to survive. To make matters worse, the waves and current were driving him right into the beach of the island he just bombed, where they're cannibalizing people. You can imagine what they were going to do to him. As he crept closer and closer, unable to stay away from the island, he began to see something in the water. He thought maybe it was his imagination. Then he realized it was a periscope. Now the enemy was going to pick him up in a submarine. But it was an American submarine. And they picked him up. And George made it through all of those experiences, only to get in the submarine and have depth charges dropped on him, where they had to dive and remain totally still, praying that the enemy's depth charges would not reach them, unable to control it, only able to rely on one thing, faith, the belief that what they were doing is right and that God would protect them. He survived all of this to come back to be a war hero and went back on many successful bombing missions after that. Do you think those references might play a role in somebody's certainty of good versus evil and the power of the American military to do things that can make a difference? Do you think that might affect someone's future decision-making? You bet it did. How about Saddam Hussein? His father physically abused him on a regular basis, and his uncle taught him how to nurture a grudge and to hate the English overlords. He got himself involved in an environment with a Ba'ath political party, where within his first year of being involved with them, they made an attempt to kill the leader of the nation, and they succeeded a few years later. He was rewarded continuously for being a bright man who could develop propaganda in an effective way. He helped train the secret police, and he was constantly rewarded for being ruthless, for murdering anything or anyone that got in his way, until by the mere age of 42, he took control of the nation of Iraq. And by the way, why do so many people support this madman, as we would probably call him? Why are these Iraqis supporting him? Well, you might say, well, many of them don't support him. Well, I would probably agree with you on that. But many of them don't know anything else. All they know is what they're taught. I read an article recently in the newspaper talking about Iraqi children and how they're taught that Saddam is the hero from the very youngest ages. We're talking 4 and 5 years old, where they tell stories of his grandeur and all the other great Arab leaders and how Saddam is like those great Arab leaders from the times of the Crusades. Yet even with this, references aren't everything. Are there other people that could have been on the same ship and been devastated by the destruction of a friend and taken from that life is not worth living? That man is evil and sinister? Could Saddam Hussein have been abused and come out an incredibly sensitive person who would say he would never allow anyone to be abused around him, who would strive to help others who'd been through the same situation? Of course. The ultimate factor is decisions still, our interpretations of our references. Yet our references definitely play a role. And what determines which references play a bigger role in our life is what do we get rewarded for and what do we get punishment for by life and our experience. Again, Saddam was rewarded for ruthlessness, right? You and I have been rewarded for other things, hopefully for love, for contribution, for growth, and is moving us into a different destination for our lives. I have an incredible opportunity to study how human beings utilize their references every time I do a Date with Destiny seminar. Because people fill out an extensive form, and one of the questions there is to have people list for me the five events that have shaped their life the most. What they really begin to do is give me some of the most powerful references of their lives. And what's amazing is the contrast you get by reading these. Because I find people every Date with Destiny who are sharing some common references. Let's say they were raped, or they were sexually abused by a family member, or they had a father or mother that left the home or got divorced at some point, or they were poor growing up. All these references are common in the culture. And yet one person takes these experiences and backs them up as the reason that their life has not worked, and someone else uses it to motivate themselves, to study, to expand, to grow, to share, to be more sensitive. Oprah Winfrey is a great example of this. Here's a woman who was raped and abused. And the bottom line is she's now touching people's lives. She's doing it through films. She's doing it through television. She's helping people to heal some of the wounds of their past. She's not abusive. She's not taking advantage of other people because she was taken advantage of. So again, even though I've talked so much about the references of our lives, it's not just the references that determines our lives. Yes, the references are, that is, our experience provides a fabric we can cut our own ideas and beliefs from. But it depends on what part of that fabric you focus on that determines your life and what meaning you pull from it. Again, two people can have the same experience but pull a different meaning depending upon what they focus on and how they decide to interpret it. In other words, in essence, your destiny is shaped by your decisions and not by your conditions. You utilize references and you can go get the references that you need in order to succeed. See, many people say, but I can't succeed because I've never done this before. I don't have the references to pull it off. I don't have the experience. Well, guess what? Anyone who's ever achieved anything on a major scale really achieved it because there were no references there. They had to create the references within themselves. You say, what are you talking about? Well, think about it. References are not limited to our own conscious experience of life. References come in many shapes and types and sizes. We have the references of our past, yes. We have the references of the experiences of our present, but we all have the ability to pull references from our future. You might say, well, what do you mean by that? I mean, references are not limited to your actual experience. Your imagination is a source of references. Anyone who's created anything had to create a sense of certainty within themselves that they could achieve, that they could go. How did Columbus get himself to be able to come here? And he had to develop some references, and there weren't any. So what did he do? He unleashed his imagination. Your imagination is 10 times more powerful than your willpower. Our imagination unleashed can give us a sense of feeling and certainty and vision that goes far beyond the limitations of our past. And we're not limited to references as far back as 1492. We can come into the modern day. Lee Iacocca created references for himself and for everyone around them to believe that Chrysler could make it so that our Congress would be willing to put money in to support that organization in turning itself around. Mr. Morita, the person who wrote the book Made in Japan, the co-founder of Sony, an unbelievably brilliant man, and he said one of the toughest and most important decisions he made in his life was when Bulova Company came to him and offered to buy 100,000 transistor radios when his company was just getting going and they had the breakthrough radio. Well, at the time, they weren't even doing 10,000 units a month. The amount of money involved was worth tenfold what his company was worth at the time. It was an unbelievable deal, and yet he walked away from it. Why? You say he's crazy. The company's barely surviving. He can't do that. But what they wanted to do was put Bulova's name on those radios. And Mr. Morita said, there is no way I'm going to do this. And they said, look, you can still make your own radios too and put your name on them. We've been around for 50 years. You can benefit by putting this out. You can get the capital to expand your business. He said, yes, sir, that's true. But I'm going to turn you down and say no. He said, because 50 years from now, my company's name will be as big as yours. And I know this radio is going to help us to develop that name. Now, everyone around him told him he was crazy, even his partners. They said, this is insane. How was he able to create the certainty to make that tough a decision? He did it by using his imagination. He focused in his mind on what he wanted things to be like, and he believed with absolute faith and certainty his vision. You see, the memories of your past are just pictures in your head. They're sounds, they're sensations that you generate. You feel them when you focus on them. Can you not also focus on how you want things to be and focus on it so continuously till it feels just as real to you and gives you the kind of certainty to take the actions that are necessary to succeed? Because you haven't done something doesn't mean you can't. Because you've tried something again and again and again and failed doesn't mean the next time you won't succeed. The past does not equal the future. Thomas Edison attempted to make the electric light bulb thousands of times. He could have taken all those experiences of things not working out and called them failures. Instead, he used every one of those as a reference for himself that he was getting closer to the solution. So again, references are invaluable, but in essence, it's what we choose to do with them that determines our life. Your past is a place you can learn from, but it's not a place you want to live. See, it's a place to spring forward from. And what doesn't work, throw it away. It's never too late to have a happy childhood. Whatever you're feeling is what you're focusing on, and you're in control of that process. So remember, while the fabric may be there, there are unlimited references, and they're not just your past. Plus, you're not limited to even your own personal experiences as references. You can borrow the references of other people. Most of my life early on, I didn't have the references that I could be a great success, or that I could achieve on major scales, or I could go out and turn things and people around. I did it with my imagination. I did it by reading stories of people that were succeeding and saying, hey, they've done this, and seeing where they really started and that hard work was really a part of it and that they kept their vision, they persisted, and they didn't give up. Those references made it real for me. Captain Jerry Coffey, who was a prisoner of war in Vietnam for over 7 years, a good deal of that time in solitary confinement, one of the things that kept him going was when the outside world gave him no references for joy, he turned to the inside world, where he memorized as a child various poems and stories, and that's how he and the other men were able to make their world right. You got to make sure you've got a rich internal world, and that's where the power of literature and stories and myths and examples and poems, that's where movies and seminars and ideas and tapes are so invaluable. One woman sent me a poem that I thought was really beautiful, how she helped herself to turn around the meaning of some of the challenges in her life, and I thought I might read it to you. It might be another reference. You know, that's what's exciting about life, by the way. You never know what reference is going to change your whole life. It might be the next poem you read. It might be the next book you read. It might be the next horrible experience that makes you just get intense and pull that giant inside of you out and take advantage of the opportunities that life has for you. Here's her poem. She says, "Endings are the seeds for beginnings. Tomorrow will come in time. Even in hopelessness lies a seed of hope, and even a small seed can climb. But the little seed has to give up its past on its voyage to the sprouting tree. Didn't you ever transcend your life, previous visions of who you could be? Every cloud opens up to the smiling sun, and the low will soon reach high tide. Exits and entrances are at the same gate, moving through what was as your ticket to pride. Two triangles have to surrender themselves to ever make it to the square. And every simple discovery in life makes you give up something you thought was there. Little choices build big character. Tomorrow's pearls are grains of sands today. Hear the whispers of strong seeds beginning through the sounds of fading endings going on to better ways. Caterpillars will someday butterfly off the ground. You have to give up your youth to be king. Horses run best by not looking back. And the trapeze artist has to let go to grab a higher hold on things. Yes, you have to give up your known discomfort in order for you to soar in flight, but isn't the end of something wrong always something that's got to be right? You stand at the spot where endings and beginnings meet, deciding your fate, handcuffed by the past or free. One path will take you to the place you have been. The other path is the seed to lift you to where you could be. So pick yourself up like the rising sun, like the wind lifting the silent sea. Put hope in your heart like a seedling in spring and step forward to a new destiny." When you read great poetry or when you read a great book, the power of it is as you read the book, you start thinking like the author. You start to feel like they feel, think like they think. You begin to imagine the way they imagine. You begin to develop those references as well. That's the power of culture. That's the power of literature, of a good play, of music. That's why we want to constantly be expanding our references, exposing ourselves to things that maybe we don't think we're going to like, and all of a sudden you find out you love them. I'll never forget one time I used to think, I don't want to go to a play. And one day I went and saw a play years ago called Les Miserables. Wow. One of the most powerful references of my life. I got to tell you, I have never seen or read or heard anything that moved me as deeply as that play did. Since then, I'm an addict. You know, a couple days ago, I just went and saw Aspects of Love. I saw Phantom of the Opera about four times. I mean, I love the power and the majesty that human beings can translate through so many different areas, through story, through music, through drama. See, we want to expose ourselves to all of those things. We don't want to prejudge. You know, I've done a lot of things that were lousy too. But my attitude is if I can get one idea from it, if I can get one feeling, one experience, one exposure, it expands me. Limited references create a limited life. You want to expand your life? Expand your references consciously by pursuing other ideas and experiences that you haven't currently been exposed to. Hey, that's the value of seminars. Why do you think I read 700 books? Because a lot of those books were lousy, but I got one idea, it was worth it. Or if all it did was reinforce what I already knew, it gave me a greater sense of certainty, and maybe by the repetition, it get me to actually do it. See, people come to Date with Destiny for references. They walk on fire for references. Till you've done those experiences, you don't know what they can trigger you to do. You don't know what it can happen in your life until you've exposed yourself. Experience is an invaluable tool, and you can pull so much from others as well. And we all are going to have times in our life where something's going to happen we have no references for how to deal with. And instead of just sitting there and giving up or saying, you don't know how bad it is, and telling them how terrible your life is, what eventually you must do is stand up and create those references or seek them out. See, no matter how bad you think things are in your life, somebody else has got it worse. No matter how well it's going, somebody else is doing better. Use contrast to move yourself forward. See, the only danger that destroys the quality of our lives are destructive beliefs. So when you start believing the way you're supposed to be is immobilized by pain or by problems, or that because you've got so many challenges no one else can understand, or because you've had a loss of a friend or a business or a goal or a dream for the moment or forever, that your life is over. When we start adopting those kinds of beliefs, our life ends. Instead, we must seek out references. And again, somebody out there can help you to feel better, if not by showing you that they're feeling worse. I mean, all you got to do is look around. You know, for example, I talked to somebody recently who works within our team, and the guy's really stressed out because he's making $150,000 a year as a doctor. 3 years ago, he was making $13,000 a year, and he was stressed out. The difference is now his stress is things like, gosh, they want to go to Paris this year, and he's not sure if he can do that on top of a couple other things that he wants to do. He doesn't have quite enough time to be able to run his practice, give the quality he's committed to his patients, and be able to take off as much time as he'd like to. That's his stress. And he's getting as stressed out now about that as he used to when he's trying to figure out how he could survive, how and if he was going to be able to send his kids to college, and when he was ever going to be able to have any time off. He was working 6 to 7 days a week. Now he works 4 to 5. I mean, we lose perspective. And if I ever start to lose perspective because I think I'm working so hard, and I do it just like you. We all do. The way I try and balance myself out is a little contrast. And the thing I do with my family, if we ever get out of balance, as I remind them of an experience we all shared. There was a gentleman who attended one of our seminars not many years ago who was just a really warm, gentle soul. He wasn't an outstanding personality that dominated or achieved or pushed, but you know, you were touched by his gentleness. He was a wonderful man. And one day, I got a note from one of our graduates who picked up a newspaper article outside of Toronto, Canada. And there was an article that I read that definitely affected our lives. And the gentleman's name was Joe Fritsch. And Joe, I guess one day, decided to pull into a gas station. And he didn't know it was about to take place. Two men who'd escaped from prison had been out for a while and decided that they didn't like the outside world. You know, their idea of their references they were comfortable with was prison life. They thought they wanted to be free, but when they got out there, they didn't like the way it felt. They didn't like being on the run. So their idea of how to get back was to murder someone, to kill the very next person who came into the gas station. Didn't matter if it was a man, woman, or child. Joe was in the wrong place at the wrong time, or maybe the right place at the right time, depending upon what you believe spiritually. Bottom line, they murdered him right there. He left 5 children and his wife. Can you imagine? You think you have problems? You have no problems. That family had some problems. You know what's unbelievable? The amount of love and support and caring. You know, I called his widow and I spoke to her on the phone. I'd never met her before and tried to offer any way I could support. And She talked to me about how deep the pain was, but I also realized the most important thing in this event was the meaning that she and the children were going to pull from this, because this was a reference that would shape their destinies. But how it shaped their destinies was not the event, but what were they going to pull from it? What was it going to mean? They had the power to decide. And I asked her that. I said, what is this going to mean to you? She said, I guess it could mean that people are horrible and destructive, and you can do everything right, and life can still take advantage of you. And I held my breath, thinking, how can I help her to see another meaning? And she said, but you know, I realize if I teach my kids that, and if I believe that, then there's no reason to live. And she said, I just can't believe that. She said, you know, we've received too much love and too much support. You cannot believe the hundreds of letters that we've received and people in the community coming to support us. And she said, well, it's so painful right now. She says, I know it must have happened for a reason. She said, I don't have a way to back it up. It's just my faith. She had to borrow from the future. She had to borrow. Her faith is the ultimate reference. She knew if she didn't do this, it would destroy her own life as well as her children's forever. And she knew she had to stand up and dig deep inside and find a meaning where no meaning seemed to exist. What a powerful woman. How lucky those children are. I asked her, I said, what do you talk to the children about? She said, I want you to notice, kids. Notice all these people and how much love they're giving, that people are really good. That there are a few people in the world that are really bad, they're messed up, they're screwed up, and they need to be helped. But that your dad always believed in God, and he's gone to a better place, and he had things to do while he was here, and his time was up. But our time is not up. We've got to take advantage while we're here. What this should remind us is that every day we've got to live to our fullest together, and we can't look at losing him because he'll always be with us. Wow. How fortunate these kids are. Maybe a lesson we could all remember. And if you start feeling like, well, gosh, you know, I'm not making as much money as I think I should, maybe a little perspective would help by having the references of other people. By the way, I'm not making you feel bad if you're feeling bad about things. I'm just saying if you decide you're tired of feeling bad, easy way to feel good is go get some other references. And if you have no way to back something up, faith is still the ultimate reference. Always return to that. You've got to be willing to trust. So look through other people's references. And realize that your references are not real. They're only what you've focused on. In any situation, although the references of your life, like being abused or being loved or having somebody leave at an early age or come into your life at an early age, you know, all those things are real. And yet what you pulled from them is what's going to shape your life. And it all depends on what you focus on. What's real is what you focus on. That's all that's real in your life. So you better make sure that you don't blame your references for where you are, but you take advantage of the references you have. And if you don't have strong enough references, create them or go get them. We all have that capacity. And I'm here to tell you that every great leader, every person that succeeded ever in their life has found themselves in places where they didn't know what to do, and they made the references up or they went and got them. It's up to you to take control. I'm also here to tell you that if you don't take control of this process, you're going to pay a big price. See, it's easy in life to get caught up in Niagara. We've talked about it so many times, right? You jump on the river of life, and you have an idea where you're going, and you think you know where you're going, but hey, some things along the way knock you off course. And before you know it, sometimes we get caught up in the current of life, current demands, current fears, current challenges. And pretty soon we get to the forks in the river, and we don't know where we're going. We let the river decide for us. We let the river of our despair, the river of our challenge, the river of demands of people around us, and we don't make conscious choices. We start acting like everybody else. And if you do everything like everybody else, if you respond to despair and to challenge and disappointment and frustration like everybody else, then you're going to end up like everybody else. Most people are not happy. Most people are not in control of their life. One out of two are in divorces, right? Less than 10% like their body and say they're at their ideal weight. You know, we're in a society where people are popping drugs and alcohol and food all to try to change the way they feel because they haven't learned to master it. Most people are so caught up in the river, this thing called life, that one day they wake up having been swept by the river and realize they're 5 feet from Niagara Falls in a boat with no oars, and they say, oh shoot, but it's too late. Now is the time to take control of your life upstream. Now is the time to say, I want to experience all of life, and the painful experiences of life that are there, I'm going to pull some value from. Now is the time to decide that the focus of your life is going to be on utilization. That whatever life gives you, you'll find a way to use it to your advantage, to the advantage of others. That's the only way in life to feel rewarded and fulfilled. That's the only way to guarantee that this life has joy continuously. By the way, does this mean that you're never going to get down? You're never going to get frustrated? You're never going to feel despair? Of course not. You're going to feel those things, and you have the right to. But when you do, realize that they're a message, and the message is that you've got to change what you're focusing on, the way you're interpreting this thing, your perception about this, or you got to take some action right now to utilize what's happened. I also want to remind you that if you take the events of today and put a meaning on them immediately, you may be prejudging whether this is a good day or a bad day in your life. See, I'm here to tell you that some of the worst days in your life, you thought, are some of the best. Think about it for a second. Think of one of the worst experiences that's ever happened in your life, one of the very worst. As you think back to that experience, be honest with yourself. Isn't it true, if you look back on it now, that the truth is, in some way, it's positively shaped your life? Maybe it's made you more sensitive and more caring about other people because you were abused as a child, or maybe it's made you make sure that you treated your children totally different and it shaped their destiny for the good. Maybe because when you didn't have freedom when you were a kid, it drove you to create more freedom for other people. Maybe because you didn't have respect, you're more respectful. Maybe because you didn't have love, you're more loving. Maybe because something happened that was horrible, it just changed the entire direction of your life. Now you might say, yeah, that's true. Then maybe your bad days aren't so bad after all, as you look back on them. And you might say, no, Tony, I've had some things that there's no way I can ever get over these. I'll always have pain for these. You're right, as long as you hold that they mean something like you've been taken advantage of or you have a loss that can never be returned. Just remember, loss is imaginary. Everything you think you've lost is an imagination because everything in the universe only changes form. Nothing ever disappears. What you got to remember is if there's something you're still not gotten over, it's because of the meaning you've linked to it. And maybe what you need to do is get some faith in there and say, even though I don't know why this has happened, I'm willing to trust. I'm willing to trust that someday I will. I'm willing to trust my creator. That's a big leap. It's called the leap of faith. But it's the one that every one of us has to meet at some time in our life if we're going to move to the next level. And I got to tell you, every day you and I got to use faith. We got to use faith to be able to survive and to succeed. I remember reading a story recently about Billy Joel, where it was talked about how years ago when he was 21, 22 years old, how he was ready to commit suicide. Unfortunately, he got himself into a hospital. You want to know why he was going to commit suicide? Because he'd been in these bars where he'd been playing his piano, you know, his piano man songs, where people sit there and they don't listen and they're drunk and they spit all over you, they don't appreciate you. He'd been doing that since I think he was 16, 17 years old. Here he was, 22. My gosh, think of that, 6 straight years of heck like that. You know, not being able to really feel any fulfillment, no direction, nobody liked his music, and the only thing in his life that gave him any brightness was he felt he'd found the girl of his dreams, and then she left him. He's ready to commit suicide. Why? Because he knew he'd never amount to anything and he'd never find a woman as beautiful as her. What kicked him out? New references. When he checked into that mental institution, he found out what real pain was. He got in that environment where he couldn't even turn his back on people. And he thought to himself, I have no problems and I will never let myself get that down again. He said, that is ridiculous. And he never has. The rest is history. Just remember, God's delays are not God's denials. What appears to not be working out right now, what seems to be a horrible event, may in fact be a reward. It may be a blessing. Returning back to Made in Japan with Mr. Sony, Mr. Morita, it talked about in the very beginning of his company, before it was even known as Sony, that right after the war, they wanted to make these wire recorders, and they couldn't get anyone to make the wire for the recorders they were developing because no one was willing to bet on such a small, tiny little company that wouldn't succeed. And they tried everything they knew, and it looked like they couldn't build the recorder. Thank goodness. But because of that, they eventually found tape recorders and became one of the biggest makers of them in the world. See, what seemed like a horrible event turned out to be a benefit. Just remember, the next time you're feeling bad, you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. The only thing is, you're not going to know which ones they really are until much later in your life. So at this point, you might say to me, then, Tony, how do I know what's really true? How do I know what I really should believe? Well, think about it this way. Beliefs are designed to empower you to take effective action so you can grow and expand and make a difference for yourself and the people you care about. What should you do? You should look for beliefs that will empower you. It's not whether a belief is accurate or not, because you can back up a feeling of accuracy on almost any belief. Hey, in any argument, you can always get somebody to back up your view. You can always find a way. If you talk to somebody who says, yeah, well, I have the statistics, say, yeah, and I've read the book called How to Lie with Statistics. Most attorneys have it. There really is such a book, and it'll show you how to manipulate any kind of statistic. So I'm here to tell you that we need to find the statistics and the experiences in life that cause us to constantly grow and expand, that cause us to move to the next level, that cause us to utilize life's challenges and turn them into life's opportunities. That's what you and I have to do continuously. Remember, people can rationalize anything. Remember what we talked about earlier. You've got references to back up the idea that people are terrible and mean and they'll take advantage of you, and you can get yourself to feel certain and prove that's true, and you got the references to back up the idea that people really care. If you give them half a chance, they'll support you. So what you're going to believe is what is empowering, and that's the key question you might want to learn to ask yourself. If you feel like you're overwhelmed or overloaded or you can't get through it, or you don't have to turn things around, or you're really mad at somebody, or you're stuck in a lousy pattern, a good question to ask yourself is, what would I have to believe in order to feel this way? See, if you ask that question, your brain may say things like, well, I'd have to believe that I'm totally out of control and that I don't direct my own life. And there's probably a belief inside of you that's contrary to that, one that says, that's garbage. And the minute you hear that, the minute you notice it, the awareness alone can be curative. Just seeing that, you can say, oh, this is garbage. No way. I don't believe that. And you can move on. It can break your pattern. See, oftentimes we organize our references in a way that limit us. Remember what I said earlier, limited references create a limited life. There's a term in sociology that we should all become more familiar with, and it's called ethnocentricity. What does it mean? It means we all run around thinking our references are the only references for the world. I mean, for example, what do you think would happen if one day I said, hey, let's go to lunch, and we walked into a particular third world country, and I won't say which one just to not aggravate certain people of that nationality, but I'll tell you, there are many countries in the world where this is true, one specifically I'm thinking of. Well, we could go in and there are cages in the room, and there are dogs in those cages. We go up to the counter and I say, we'll take that one. And sure enough, they take out the dog, they cut its throat right there, and they begin to skin it and cook it. You say, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. These people are killing this poor dog. And look at these people around. You begin to realize that all the people sitting there, it's in a little mini type of restaurant, and they're all eating dog. You say, this is crazy. Is it? Well, I would tend to agree with you. But how do you think an Indian feels when they come and see you eating cow right in front of them? An Indian who has a belief that that is a holy creature that you're putting inside your body. I guess it all depends on references, what you believe, huh? Maybe the next time you get really upset with somebody, maybe one of the ways you can at least have some compassion and understanding is to see that, you know, they probably have different references than you do. Now, that's not an excuse, but at least can allow us to have a better understanding of each other of people, because it is true. You could have the same references and have interpreted them differently. And you could have come out totally differently based on the same situation, but compassion is going to get us a lot further. If you don't understand, if you've got an argument with somebody, stop and say, if I had their references and if I'd interpreted in the same way they had, I'd be feeling the same way. So I'm not going to make them wrong. All I want to do is try and give them some new references so they might have a new perspective, because that's how we develop new beliefs, by new references. Now, you can realize that certain references, in spite of being given, can be ignored to maintain an old belief. But I'm also here to tell you, if someone gets enough new experiences, enough new references, oftentimes you can trigger and create a total change. And that's one of the reasons I do the firewalk. I can talk to you all day long about the power of your brain, and you go, yeah, I know I'm tapping less than 10% of my brain. Most people brag about that. But if I get you in a firewalk and I get you to get across this fire, 12 feet of burning hot coals, 1,500, 2,000 degrees, what happens is it's not like mind over matter. It's nothing special. But I'll tell you one thing, on the other side of that fire, it gives you an experience you won't forget. It's a new reference. And your brain says, if I can get myself to do this, what else could I get myself to do that I once thought was also impossible? Maybe fear is just false evidence that appears real, F-E-A-R. Maybe what we need to do is get new references, and the things we fear will be things we'll be able to utilize and move on. So if you want to shape your life, seek out references, more of them. Expand your life by expanding your references. You know, I can talk to you about so many of these subjects that we talk about in Power Talk because I'm always trying to expand my references. I'm not brilliant. I'm just somebody that's constantly looking for new ideas. Because, see, I believe the old, you know, G-I-G-O computer term, you know, stands for garbage in, garbage out. You know, we've got to stand guard at the door of our mind. We've also, if we want to help the people around us, get them to be more vigilant as well and learn to utilize those references. See, are you a little bit concerned when you find out that there's gangster rap songs out right now? The lyrics actually talk about cutting a girl's throat and then having sex with her corpse. I mean, you think that kind of references continuously sung inside somebody's head might play a role? I'm not saying it's going to make them go out and do it. I'm just saying it's trash. Does that mean I think we should cut all those albums out? No. I think one of the beauties of our country is freedom, but I think that you and I have the responsibility to let people know what's on this thing, what it means, and what it should be a representation of is the garbage and trash that can destroy the quality of life. That's our responsibility. See, we can use the horror of life in a very positive and powerful way to have our kids understand why people think the way they do and why they do what they do and why they'll never be that way. See, my children will never do drugs. I can promise you that. You know why? Because my two youngest, I got a chance to take, and rather than just tell them about drugs, I gave them a reference experience. I took them down to the South Bronx and to parts of Brooklyn, and we went into welfare hotels where people doing crack and cocaine and injecting their body full of stuff. They got to smell and taste and hear and feel what the environment of drugs is like. They'll never forget it. See, we can utilize whatever life has, but we got to do it proactively. Hey, my life is nothing but a rich set of references that I'm trying to expand each day, and I want to sell you on doing the same. See, I started reading books years ago because I knew those references would change my life. I knew that I could learn from Abe Lincoln. You know, I knew I could learn from Emerson. I knew I could learn from some of the positive thinking books, and I kept pushing those references in my mind because I realized if I didn't do that consciously, if I didn't feed my mind, then I'd have to dine on the intellectual candy that could be found around me. You know, if all we do is pay attention to the newspapers and magazines and whoever wants to give us their opinion, we can have some major challenges in our life. You know, we got to be smart. And so I try to find that. I went and studied all the technologies of creating change because I knew they had to be out there. I believe if other people are doing better, it's just because they have some references I don't have, or they're doing some things. They're living their life. They're not just talking about it. So I started with books, and then I went to seminars. And then I started doing all kinds of activities on top of it. That's why I went and learned to scuba dive, so I could explore that world and, you know, have that sense of mastery and confidence of being able to do that. So I went skydiving. Here, I'm here to tell you, you don't know what faith is until you've jumped out of a plane at 12,500 feet and fell at 130 or 40 miles an hour and pulled your own chute. You know, you don't know what balance is till you've done something like stand on a 50-foot pamper pole that's waving back and forth, and being able to stand up there and be balanced and be able to trust and have faith and jump and move. See, those experiences are real. They're in your body. You know, I went to racing school for the same reason. Till you've gone 140 miles an hour straight at a wall and haven't even made a turn, you don't know what concentration is. And you know what? All those experiences, all those references have helped me understand my life and who I am. Now, you might say, well, those sound pretty intense to me. Well, that's true, but you need some intensity. You don't have to do all the things I'm doing. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying, soak up more of your life. Go today. Go take an airplane lesson or helicopter lesson. You know, go drive a new kind of car that you've always dreamed about just for the reference of what it feels like. Go to a play. Go to a movie. Go to a children's hospital and just go and visit and tell stories. You might not know what to do. Put yourself on the line and find out what you're capable of. A lot of references come from just being in a certain situation where you don't know what to do, and then something shows up. You know, I guess what I'm doing is I'm asking you to live your life at another level. I'm asking you to go seek out, become a seeker, become somebody who lives this life, because so much is out there. And remember, the limits you experience in your life right now are probably just limited references. Expand your references, you expand your life. My spiritual references, I can tell you, came because when I was 16 years old, I decided I wanted to have more references than just the church I'd been in. So I heard some people talking about how horrible Mormons were. So I thought, you know what? I don't think anybody in the world is horrible. I got to go to one of their churches. So I went there, and I found I wasn't horrible. In fact, I found there were all kinds of great things there, and some of them that I'd heard in my own church. What a concept. Then I found myself in a Jewish synagogue. Weekend after weekend, I went to different places of worship, and I participated with them. I got a chance to experience their view of life and their understanding. You know what? It broadened me so much because I saw that certain universal truths everybody seems to agree with, and it allows me to connect with people and not judge people because they have a different belief than what maybe I was taught at one time. See, we all have got to expand. So plan a trip to go to Paris and look directly at the Mona Lisa. Figure out what it's going to take for you to go swim with the dolphins. You know, figure out what it's going to be like to be in Fiji and say bula 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 directly to a Fijian instead of listening on a tape here in Power Talk. You know, find out what it'd be like to be in Alaska. Explore your country, explore your world, explore who you are. Take a speed reading course, you know, and bring more into your life. And you know what? Explore and utilize the pain as well. You know, I took a trip a couple of years ago that I'll never forget. We went to the morgue in New York City, and I had a good friend of mine there take us down there just for the references, because while I had been in the presence of someone who died, that was a whole different experience. I can only tell you it was a reference I'll never forget, and one that made me appreciate life at a whole nother level. See, I can go on and on. I've gotten too inspired here. I go crazy on these things, so I think I'll stop now. What's my message? One, your references provide a fabric of life experience that you can cut empowering beliefs and decisions from. Make sure you do it consciously. Two, make sure you remember it's not your references, but your interpretations of those experiences and events of your life that shape who you are. Three, remember you're not limited to just your references in life. Learn from other people. That's why you're listening to these tapes. That's why I'm going every month and interviewing all these wonderful people, because they're providing you and me some of the richness of their life, some of the ideas and beliefs and distinctions. And you don't have to agree with everything they say, but isn't it invaluable to know, to be exposed, so you can decide what to believe from a broader plate of experience? That's why I'm doing Power Talk. And not tell you what's right, because I'm not right. But tell you what I believe, so you can take what works and say, yeah, and what doesn't work for you, you can throw it out and say, ah, he's full of garbage and that, but I really still love him. Better say that too, okay? So take all the references in a valuable way, but never take them as absolute. Now again, don't ever become anybody's absolute disciple. Learn from everybody. Have them be your friend. Have them be your coach. But don't take them as the ultimate authority. In essence, in your life, you got to eventually make your own decisions. And the way to do that is get lots of references, even in the medical area. You want to make sure you get a good second opinion. And most doctors now agree with that approach because we all make mistakes. In fact, this month's Power Talk, you'll get a little feedback about that from the person we're interviewing, Dr. Bernie Siegel. I'll give you a powerful example of why we should pay attention. I tore this article out of USA Today, and I've used it to remind people that, you know, doctors care so much, but they're also doing things based on what they've been taught, just like you and I have been. It says, quote, how well you recover from an illness depends on the doctor that you choose and the hospital in which you're treated. The reason is there's a tremendous variation in the way doctors diagnose and treat diseases and the equipment that various hospitals have available. See, no matter how much somebody cares or how sincere they are, we're all limited by our references. So make sure you get a second opinion. Also, there comes a point when you just got to decide. Because you can get references to back up anything. There's an old Chinese phrase that says, a man with one watch knows what time it is. A man with two watches is never sure. So am I contradicting myself? Yes and no. I'm saying get as many references as possible, and then sooner or later decide what is right for you and go for it. Bottom line is, life is lived by being willing to constantly expand what we know and what we feel and what we do. Make sure you do it consciously. Make sure you interpret your life in a way that empowers you. So here's your assignment. Number one, I want you to pull out your journal. You have a journal now, right? If you don't, I'm going to come find you. You should have a journal by now. Okay. Now, what I want you to do, number one, is I want you to write down what are five of the most powerful experiences of your life that have really shaped your life. And I want you to, as you write those five down, I want you to make a note how it shaped your life. I want you to remember as you're writing this down that while it's shaped your life that way up until now, if you write down some that have negatively shaped your life, then your immediate next assignment, number two, is to come up with another interpretation of that event, no matter what it takes. You might say, well, I can't. You can, and if you can't, then you must. Stretch yourself. So what's another way of looking at this? And it may require some faith. It may require you looking at it in a way you've never dreamed of looking at before. But remember, as long as you hold something as you've been wronged or something's been taken advantage of, there is no purpose behind something or it's senseless, you're going to be in pain. And it's time for you to give yourself what you deserve, which is the pleasure that life is about. And the pleasure that you have in your own body, you'll be able to share with the people around you because your state affects the people you care about. So that's number two. Number three is, as you review this list of all the positive events that have shaped your life, what I want you to do is think about what are some new references that would be valuable for you to go get in your life? What are some new experiences you need? Maybe a good question might be, in order to really succeed at the highest level of my life, to move myself to the next level, to achieve what I really want from my life, what are some references I need? You know, maybe what you need is you need to find somebody who knows how to master their time better than you do, or you need to find somebody who's really made their relationships work and go talk to them and model them and find out what are some of their beliefs, what are some of their references about what makes a relationship work. Or maybe this needs some references to make you appreciate life more or some references that'll make you feel like you're contributing. I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, I love my job, but, and then they talk about how they have all these other things they want to do in their life. And some of the things they want to do, they say, but that won't make me any money and I got to support my family. Well, hey, I can tell you, when I first started, before I was even doing seminars, when I was 18 years old, one of the things that I did is I joined the M2 program, Match Two People at a local prison system. And I went in there, and I had a guy they hooked me up with, and I'd go see him once or twice a month, and I'd write him, and I'd talk to him, and He was my project. I really wanted to help this young man. And I got him where he was literally running 5 miles a day. And at the time I started with him, he wasn't doing any of that stuff. And you know what, how I did it? By giving him new references. I was such an addict to all this positive thinking stuff, right? And I'd bring him Think and Grow Rich and As a Man Thinketh and Emerson's Essays. And I just kept feeding him all these things. And I brought him in tapes and I talked to him about new beliefs. And it changed his life. And when he got out of prison, he changed his entire direction. I had that sense of contribution. I wasn't paid for that. I wasn't being a seminar giver. That wasn't my career, but I found a way to have that fulfillment. See, we're not limited except by limited thoughts. Get a little bit out there. Think of some new ways to do things. And then fourthly, think of what would be some fun references to have. Maybe you don't need them, but they'd be fun. Or maybe they'd put you in a better state. Hey, I got into martial arts because I thought, what an incredible set of states to be in. I got my black belt in Taekwondo in 8 months by absolute total focus. Because I realized if I could get myself to have the reference of disciplining myself in that area of my life, that reference of discipline would spill over to many areas of my life, and it did. So what else could you do? And then my fifth question to you, after you've brainstormed out things you really need to do and will, and put a timeline and a date on it, that is, decide when you're going to go do that. When are you going to go take that dance class? When are you going to go take that singing lesson? When are you going to go drive that car? When are you going to go to the local old folks' home and sing carols or pull somebody aside and go visit them? You know, when are you going to do something you're not used to? Okay, when are you going to do those things? And the last question, I guess, is what are some references you could provide for your family that would be invaluable? Maybe it's a trip. Maybe it's something as simple as sitting down and talking about the references that the family has shared, some of your peak moments in life and remembering how valuable they are, or getting together with some of the grandparents and talking about their lives and what they've learned in their lives in their 70, 80, or 90 years. What invaluable references for all us 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, and 60-year-olds, right? Maybe it's involving your kids in creating change. Maybe it's taking them on a field trip, one that maybe you need to go on as well. You know, one of the most powerful references I know I've done with my family has been each Thanksgiving going and feeding people. I'll never forget my youngest son, Jarek, when I took him, I think when he was 4 years old. It was one of the first times he went with us on the trip and really was participating. And we had this food and we went to this park in Oceanside, California. And we found this man who was sleeping on the floor of the bathroom there with no doors, with all these clothes that he borrowed out of trash cans trying to cover him up. And he had a real long beard. And I gave this big basket, because we didn't want to just give food, we wanted to make it look fun, and had it in a blanket, and had flashlight, food, and so forth, and I gave it to my four-year-old, and Jarek took it, and I said, go ahead and give it to this man and tell him Happy Thanksgiving. And he went in there with this basket about as big as he was, or bigger, and he came in and set it down, and the man was kind of looked like he was either drunk or asleep, probably a combination of the two, and Jarek set it down, and he touched the man, and he said, Happy Thanksgiving. And all of a sudden, this man bolted and grabbed my son's hand, and my heart jumped up in my throat. And all of a sudden, he took his hand, and he brought it up to his lips, and he kissed it. And he said, thank you for caring. Boy, what a reference for a four-year-old. One maybe he'll never forget. See, if you have references, you can share them with other people. And if you really brainstorm out, you can touch people's lives by helping them to get some new references. There's no limit to our life, except our own imagination as to how we can expand our references. The books, the tapes, the seminars, the life experiences are all around you. Tap into them. Finally, in the final moments, I promise I'm going to finish here. I want to tell you about the interview for this month and also the book that you're going to have. First of all, I got to tell you, the book that you're going to have this month, I think, is the finest book on human development that you have ever had the opportunity to read. It's called Unlimited Power by an author I have tremendous respect for. People have asked me, they said, why don't you summarize your own book? So we tried to do that, but at 425 pages, it was a bit of a task. So we left a few chapters out, but I hope you enjoy the summary very much. And this month, the interview is with Dr. Bernie Siegel. He's the author of Love, Medicine, and Miracles and Peace, Love, and Healing, two number one bestsellers. He'll be giving you some powerful references as to what the human mind and emotions can do to heal our bodies. And he's got the credibility to get almost anybody's attention, which is really fantastic. Plus, he's got the humor and the kind of heart that I think will touch you. And one of the things he quotes early on in the book is Hippocrates, who said, I would rather know the nature of the person than the nature of the disease. Hopefully that'll intrigue you to listen to the interview. So until I see you next, do your homework. And I'll look forward to being with you again next month for another session of Power Talk. Till then, remember, live with passion.